Big yashar koach to all you ladies for coming out this afternoon on Tainis Esther. I know it is a struggle whether it's worth coming. On one hand, you have nothing else to do. On the other hand, you're also very tired and weak, and it keeps you busy. So big yashar koach to each one of you for coming out. Shkoyach to the Rosses for hosting, and to continue to see simcha nachas from all the children. So in my house, on Friday night or Shabbos day, my kids, in particular Bat Sheva, always asks me to ask questions to the kids. Various questions in Torah, in Chumash, in Parsha, in Yantz, anything under the sun. So one time I asked one of my sons the following question. I asked him, how do you count to 10 in Hebrew? I wanted to see what they knew in learning in Ivris, how to count in Hebrew. So he said, oh, that's easy. Hoshia esamecha v'rech esnachasecha. So my other son said to him, no, that's Yiddish. So let's talk a moment about numbers. I want to talk about the number 13. Amongst the non-Jews, amongst the goyim, the number 13 is a very bad luck number. If you go into many apartment buildings, there is no floor 13. 13 is a bad number. It's bad luck. Friday the 13th. But in Yiddishkeit, the number 13 is actually a very lucky number. So why I decided to speak about the number 13 today? Well, what's today's date? The 13th of the month. And which month of the year is this? This is the 13th month of the year. So we're in the 13th day of the 13th month. And it also connects, excuse me, to the Parsha this week. The Rabbeinu Bachai. Rabbeinu Bachai is one of the great Rishonim. He points out in this week's Parsha that there are 13 types of karbanos throughout all the Parshas that we're learning. We're learning Vayikra, we're learning Tzav, we're learning Shemini. There are 13 types of karbanos. So what does the number 13 mean? What does it signify? What's the symbolism of the number 13? What makes it such a mazel dikah number? So we know in the regular calendar year there are 12 months. So let's understand the number 12 first to appreciate the number 13. So 12 means something in nature. 12 is always the units of something, a whole. Let me give you an example. How many hours are there in the daytime? There are 12 hours in the daytime, and nighttime there are 12 hours in the nighttime. So 12 represents a full unit. How many months are in a typical year? There are 12 months in a year. How many shvatim are there? There are 12 shvatim. 12 are the units that exist in an entire entity. 12 months of a year, 12 hours in the daytime, 12 hours in the nighttime. There are 12 mazalos. Each month has a sign. There are 12 mazalos. There are 12 months. 12 is always a full unit. It's the order. It's the order of teva. The number 13 is above that. The number 13 represents a kolel, including all 12 months together. Let me explain. We have 100 pennies and there's a dollar bill. 100 pennies is comparable to 12 months. That's 12. The dollar is when everything comes together as a unit. The number 13 represents everything coming together as the unit. The number 13 is the dollar bill, not the pennies. 12 is the pennies. You need 100 pennies to get into a dollar. So the number 13 represents everything coming together. It's kolel. Kolel means to include. It includes everything together. Another example. How old does a girl have to be bas mitzvah? 12. How old does a boy have to be bar mitzvah? 13. We know that a girl is not part of a minyan. It's no offense to the ladies. It's because they don't need to be. Women are great on their own right. But they're not part of a minyan. They're not part of the klal. A boy needs to be part of the klal. Needs to be part of the tzibor. He needs to be 13. Because 13 includes everything that's below that. So now, what's special about the month of Adar Beis, which is the 13th month? So the Sefer Yetzirah. The Sefer Yetzirah was written. It was attributed to Avram Avinu. He wrote this Sefer Yetzirah, a part of it at least. In that Sefer, it's a Sefer in Kabbalah, every single month corresponds to a different Shevet. So for example, the month of Adar is Yosef. Why? Because Adar splits into two. Yosef had two Shvatim, Ephraim and Menashe. So every month has a different Shevet. Shimon and Reuven and Shimon are connected, Tammuz and Av. Every month has a Shevet. What happens in Adar Beis though? There's a 13th month. We don't have a 13th Shevet. So who is the 13th Shevet, the 13th month? We have 12 mazalos, 12 different signs of the zodiac. So each month corresponds to a different mazal. So there's no 13th mazal. There's no 13th sign. What's other base? So the answer is, the 13th month includes everyone. Other base includes Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and so on. All 12 Shvatim are included in other base. It's not just the month of Reuven. It's not just the month of Shimon. It's all of them included in this klal. So all the mazalos as well. There's no special mazal to other base. Other base includes all the mazalos. I don't know the different mazalos. There's like scale, there's a fish, there's different mazalos. They're all included in other base. The number 13 is kolil. Everything below it. All the shvatim, all the mazalos. That means other base is full of mazal. It's mazal tov. It's not mazal ra. That's why in a regular Adar, if there's a din Torah, if you have to go to a court with a non-Jew, you should choose Adar because there's special mazal in Adar. And if it's Adar Beis, there's double mazal. Because it's the 13th month with all the mazalos, all the signs are included in the 13th month. 11 years ago? 11 years ago. So I was learning in YU at the time. And it was January. So my wife was pregnant with Yishai at the time. So it was a Thursday morning. I get a call from her that she just came back from the doctor, and the doctor said she should go to the hospital. So I was told to meet her there. So I was in YU, I was driving. So I came back, we were in Queens. So I don't remember why I stopped in Queens. So I was coming on to the Van Wyck. I got off one of the service roads. Those who are familiar in the Kew Gardens Hills, there's a service road. I forget the name of it, but there's a stop sign there. Okay, I was a bit of a rush. So I didn't really stop at the stop sign. I did one of those like slow bob through and you girls drive, I guess. Some of you have gotten tickets. Okay. So I did one of those kind of slow stop sign moves and turned left. And there was a cop waiting to pull me over along with like the other 15 people who were doing that. So he was very good at this. So before I even had the chance to tell him that my wife was giving a birth at the time, he just wrote up a ticket really quickly and set me off. Okay, so I went to the hospital. My wife gave birth to Yishai the next day. It was Friday. That itself was a whole fun mice. So what happened was I got the ticket and I appealed, which means I could protest. I could try to fight this ticket and I have to pay the money and have to get points added to my license. So I appealed. You put it in the mail. I don't think emails were so popular back then. And then I got the court date and it turned out it was on Tainis Esther of that year. So I was extremely excited. But the Gemara says that if you have a Din Torah with a non-Jew, it should be in Adar. And in particular, this was on Mamash and Tainis Esther, which is Yud Gimel, the 13th, which is full of mazalos. I don't know if it was a leap year or not. I can't remember that far back. But it was on Tainis Esther. Now, Tainis Esther, even though everyone here seems to be fasting, it's a unique fast as well. Because all the other fasts of the year, other than Yom Kippur, are all days of Avelus. We're mourning Tisha B'Av, Shavuot, Seder Tammuz, Asar B'Tevis, and so on. Tainis Esther is unique, and that's a day of Simcha. It's a strange fast day where we're fasting, but we're actually supposed to be happy. So I was super excited to have this Din Torah on Tainis Esther that year. So what happens? So I went to the DMV down on Rockaway Turnpike, and I'm there. I brought a little folder just to have proof of my wife had given birth the day afterwards. So I'm there waiting. And the way it works, I only was there twice. Okay, twice, fine. I was there twice. And if your officer's there, if the officer's not there, then they let you go. If your officer is there, then you have to go up to the judge and fight it out with him. So the officer of mine was there. He calls up a few names, and they were let off, and then he calls me up. And me and the officer are standing in front of the judge. And the judge says, whatever the terminology is, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So the officer says, yes. And then he says, again, I'm getting the terminology wrong here. But the officer was asked, are you ready to prosecute or something? And the officer says, no. And the judge says, well, that's awfully nice of you, officer. So there's a little clerk who's like typing notes there. So I said, what do I do now? He says, nothing. Just go home. You're done. So what do you mean I'm done? That's it. Go home. So that was mamish the mazel of Adar, of the mazel of the 13th day in perhaps the 13th month. So the 13th month is kolal all the mazalos. It's kolal all the different shvatim all in one. There is a halacha of minhagim. Each person here has a certain minhag they have to keep to. I see there's some Sfardim here, some Ashkenazim here. So you have to daven the nusach that you grew up davening. I grew up in nusach Ashkenaz. I recently changed to nusach Svar because it became more convenient for me davening in shul. My grandfather, my great-grandfather davened nusach Ari. So everyone has different nuschals, but really you should keep to your family minog of what nusach to daven. So the Maggid of Ram, who's one of the great poskim, who writes on the Shulchan Aruch, writes that there are who knows how many types of nuschals tefillah there are. Take a guess?
Three.
No? 13. The 12/13. What does that mean? He writes that there are 12 nuschals, which correspond to the 12 shvatim. Reuven had a certain nusach tefillah. I don't know if it was Ashkenaz or Sfar, but he had some nusach tefillah. And Shimon had a nusach tefillah, and Levi had a nusach tefillah, and Yosef, and go down the line. So that's why you have to keep to your minhag, because that tells you where you came from, which shevet, which your yichas. But what happens if you don't know where you came from? Let's say a person's about tshuva, or a person's a ger, or they just lost their tradition. In the Holocaust, many people lost their mesorah. So which one should you choose? Is Ashkenaz better than Sfarad? Is Moroccan better than Yemenite? So the Maggid of Ram writes that there's a 13th nusach, which is the nusach Arizal. The Arizal, who is the greatest tzaddikim we've ever had, he created a 13th nusach, whereby he took a little bit of Ashkenaz, took a little Sfarad, a little bit Moroccan, a little bit of each of the nuschaos, and created the 13th nusach, which is kolel, which includes everyone together. So even though you may not know where you come from, by you davening Ari, you're going to at least get some of your tefillah. Has a little Reuven, a little Shimon, a little Levi, a little Yehuda, everything is included in that 13th nusach. And that's why, anyone know which group of Jews daven nusach Ari?
Chabad.
Chabad of all people. Which group of Yidden represent the all-inclusiveness more than Chabad? Having a Chabad house in every single city imaginable. They don't care what you like, look like, who you are, how you daven, everyone's invited into a Chabad house. Because Nusach Ari represents its kolel, everyone. This is the 13th. It's the 13th Nusach of Tefillah. And it's appropriate because the 13th day of Tainis Esther is a huge day of Tefillah. Purim is a big day of tefillah. Mordechai and Esther davened. So it's almost to say that this is the tefillah that includes everyone on a day like today. I'll share a heart-wrenching story with you about the Koach HaTefillah. There's a great Rav of Bordeki. Bordeki, we don't know anything about him other than the fact that he's a Talmud of Rav Chaim Mivolozhin. And he and his wife had decided, they lived in Europe, they decided to go to move to Eretz Yisrael, to make Aliyah. And the plan was that the wife was going to go ahead and set up house and just needed an apartment. And when everything's ready, she'll send back to Rav Bordeki to bring the two sons, the two children that they had. So she went ahead to set up an apartment for them. She sent a letter, we're ready, you could bring the kids. So he gets on the next boat to travel to Eretz Yisrael. And he's traveling with his two kids. And then suddenly they encounter a terrible storm at sea. And the boat capsizes. And somehow he was able to hold on to his two kids. And he was swimming towards the shore. He wasn't able to see. It was dark, or I'm not sure, day or night. The two kids holding on to him. And he's swimming in the Mediterranean as he approaches shore. And he says to his kids, I can't swim like this anymore. I need to let one of you go. And whatever the cheshbon was, he told which kid he had to let go. And he says, okay, at the count of three, I'm going to let you go. And he says, one, two. And as he's about to let go of one of his children, that child says, Tati, Tati, starts yelling, Tati, Tati, don't let me go. And he was given a newfound strength, and he was able to hold on to the child and swim more and more. And he's like, I can't do this anymore. I need to let you go. And he's about to let him or her go. And right before he releases her hand, she says, Tati, Tati, don't let me go. Please don't let me go. Please hold on to me. And he was given new strength, new adrenaline. And this went on and on. He's about to let go, holding on, letting go, holding on. And each time she or he cried out, Tati, Tati. Eventually he made it to the shore. He made it to the beach. And Rav Bordeki passed out on the beach. And the two children were over him, shaking their father to wake up. And finally he wakes up exhausted. And the young girl, young boy, says to her father, his father, "Thank you so much for holding on to me." And he says, "It wasn't me. This was you. Each time you screamed out, 'Tati, Tati,' I couldn't let go anymore." And when he gave this story over, when he landed, he set up, he gave a shmooze. It was during Chodesh Elul. So that's what happens in Chodesh Elul. That's what happens throughout the year. When sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to let us go, we may not deserve to be here. But as long as we call out, "Avinu Malkeinu," we said today, we scream out to our Tati and Shemayim, "Don't let us go," HaKadosh Baruch Hu is given this newfound strength to hold on to us tighter. So the day of Tainus Esther, in the month of Adar, a Mazel Tik month, is also Koach HaTfilah, that just scream out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to let us go. We discussed a number of months ago together in this group the different bakashos we have in Shemona Esrei. Every Shemona Esrei has three brachas in the beginning and three brachas at the end. What makes Shabbos different from Yontif, from Mechol, is what's sandwiched in between. So Shabbos, there's one special bracha for Shabbos. Yontif, there's one special bracha for Yontif. How many brachas are in the middle? How many bakashas do we have for Shemona Esrei during the week? Anyone know? 12? Well, really 13. 12, 13, right? We have three brachas in the beginning, and then there are 12 bakashas. Atachonein and Gal Yisrael and Rifa'enu and Slachla, all they're 12/13. The Anshei Knesset Gadol initially made 12 bakashos. Why 12? Because we said 12 is always a complete unit. 12 hours of a day, 12 hours of the night, 12 months of the year, 12 Shvatim of Klal Yisrael. So 12 bakashos means a whole unit. But came a time in history where heresy, apikorsis, became so rampant. They instituted a 13th bracha, V'lamal Shinim, which is a bracha of saying those who are going against Yiddishkeit, who reject Torah Shebichsav, who reject Torah Shebaal Peh, they're cut off. Why is it a 13th bracha? Because 13 includes all the other brachas. It includes every single person, every single Yid, whether they dress this way, they daven this way, as long as they don't go against us. It's including everyone except for their Zaydim, Biadoske Sorsecha, those who apikorsim, those the only ones who are excluded from this 13, which includes everyone who wants to be within Yiddishkeit. But those who go against are outside this big circle. That's the number 13. That's the 13th bracha of the Bakashos Ashmin Esrei. That same concept of how number 13 includes everyone. There's an incredible Maisa, and you see the incredible Chachma of Rabbi Kiva Eger. There's a halacha that if a apikoros writes a Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah can be completely kosher. But if it's written by an apikoros, we actually would burn the Sefer Torah. With all the Shemos Hashem on it, we would burn all the psukim. If an apikoros writes such a Sefer Torah, we burn. So one time, Rabbi Kiva Eger was asked the following shaila. They found the Sefer Torah, but they have no idea who wrote it. Now, if it's written by a frum sofer, so we would have to use it and read from it. If it was written by an apikoros, you have to burn it. So those are two opposite things. So how do you ascertain who was the author? It doesn't say signed by so-and-so. So listen to the brilliance of Rabbi Kiva Eger. Say, look at the last few psukim, the last few letters of the Sefer Torah. If they are different, the script, the font are different, then we would accept the Sefer Torah. But if all exactly the same as the rest of the Torah, we wouldn't accept it. Why? Because we have a certain Mesorah, Minhag, that when you finish the Sefer Torah, you invite all the Rabbanim from the community, and they write the Aleph, the Beis, the Vav, the Tes, and my handwriting is very different than his handwriting, his different than that handwriting. So if they're all different, that means he invited everyone else and he followed with the Mesorah, we could accept such a Sefer Torah. But if he had every single letter is the same, that means the same sofer wrote the entire Sefer Torah. That means he doesn't follow in our minhagim of inviting the tzaddikim, the rabbanim of the community, and he passing you should burn such a Sefer Torah. But we see from this ma'aseh, the brilliance of Rabbi Kiva Eger, I just brought it in because we see that how apikorsis, how it could really tell us to burn a Sefer Torah. They're not invited inside our 13, inside our kal. So we have the 13th month. We have the 13th Nusach of the Ari. We have the 13th Bakasha of Lamal Shinim. We spoke about the aged 13. We also have 13 midos serachim, which we said today. Those who davened in a minyan were able to say the yigim midos serachim. So these 13 also match up very nicely to the 13 we've been discussing. What's the last of the midos? Anyone know the 13th mida that we say? Menakeh means to be clean, to be empty. So all the yigim midos rachum, it's a very confusing, difficult topic, but they describe how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is rachum, he's chanum, he's erech apayim, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu has mercy on us. But each one in its own right is missing some other element. But when you put them all together, all 12, rachum, chanun, erech apayim, all that together, you have a result of vinakeh. The result that everything is clean. Yes, the midah of chanun is very important, the midah of rachmim, but when they all come together, 13, vinakeh includes all the 12 midahs of rachmim, so then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says vinakeh, now you're completely clean. A fresh start. A new clean slate to work with here. That's the 13th midah, that which includes everything that's below it. That's vinakeh. Now it reminds me of a story of a great tzaddik of Ayashiv, the rachum that he had. It's a story I've shared before once in shul. He was once walking home from work. Now what was work for Rav Ayashiv? He didn't really work, but a few years of his life he spent working for the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. And part of the Beis Din, you take some money, I don't want to get into politics here, but he was taking a check, a paycheck from the Israeli government. So there's some Haredim who are very upset that he was taking a paycheck from the Israeli government, that means he was supporting the Israeli government. Forgetting the politics, a person in Meir Sharm saw Rav Ayashiv walking home from work, and he was going home, and he threw 3 eggs at Rav Ayashiv. And Rav Ayashiv was standing there in the streets of Meir Sharm, with eggs dripping down his coat. Now Rav Ayashiv, aside from being a tzaddik and Talmud Chacham, he was makbid, of course, in every single detail of halacha. There's a halacha that a Talmud Chacham cannot walk around with a stain. And as humble as he was aware that he was also a Talmud Chacham. That's not a steer to being someone who's humble. For Moshe Feinstein, for example, he had to have a surgery once. And he wanted to know whether that surgery would disqualify him from being on the Sanhedrin had Mashiach came in his time. That's a bit presumptuous. But Moshe knew who he was. He wasn't a Baal Gaiva. He knew he was the top 70 people in the world to be in the Sanhedrin. So he wanted to know whether this would make him possible to be in Sanhedrin. Rav Ayashiv knew he was a Talmud Chacham. So he wouldn't walk until he cleaned off these 3 eggs dripping down his coat. So he took out a handkerchief and slowly started to clean off. And the individual who just egged him was standing watching this bizyonos of Rav Ayashiv having eggs dripping down his coat. So now, I'm sure many of us would have a certain reaction, what we would say to such a person, a certain amount of choice words, or get angry, or yell. Rav Ayashiv displayed the most magnificent amount of rachamim that one could have. And this shows the brilliance of someone like such a tzaddik. Not only did he not curse him, did he not yell at him, reprimand him, not only, I would have maybe walked away and ignored it. Rav Ayashiv gave the individual bracha. Now, the bracha, just saying a bracha alone, that itself is godless. Just any bracha. But listen to the bracha. He understood what was going on here. It was in the middle of the afternoon, where most people have jobs or maybe learning. This guy was busy egging a tzaddik. So he said, I give you a bracha that you should be zocha to have. You give your bracha, you should be too busy to ever do this again. That was his bracha. This individual had been married for a number of years and not being zochet any children. The next year, his wife gave birth to triplets, which was quite a handful, which would keep him busy and out of trouble. That's midas rachman. The nakeh, the 13th midah, implies that everything, all the midas of rachman come in. And vinakeh, everything is clean. There's no ra, there's no roshim, there's no sign of any evil, any punishment left over. It's complete vinakeh. It's the 13, which kolel, which includes everything. That 13th month, the 13th bakasha, the 13th nusach of the ari, now the 13th midah of the midah sharacham. I think the ladies, do you ladies say in the morning the Yud Gimel Midos She'ator Nidreshes Bahem? As part of Psuke and Karbanos? I don't know if the girls say this or not. You don't say that. Okay. So there's a medrash that the men say, as part of Karbanos, at the end, there's what's called the Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yud Gimel Midos She'ator Nidreshes Bahem. There are 13 ways to darshan the Torah. You heard of Kal Vachomer's, Gezer Shavas? I don't know what. Okay. So there are different ways to make drushes. If a word, of you know, one word says something over here in the Torah, another word says something else, it's a Gezer Shava, we connect the two words and we learn halakhas from that. Or Kal Vachomer's we have, there's Kal Prats. There are 13 of them. Take a look if you want in your Siddur. The right before Mizmor Shir, of those who daven Nusach Svar, right before Hodul Hashem, there's the Medrash of Yud Gimel Midos, She'a Torah Nidreshes Bahem. The 13th, the final mida works perfectly. Anyone know what that 13th mida is? The 13th mida is as follows. It says, V'chein shnei aksuvim ha-machishim zed zeh. When two psukim contradict each other. So what do? It's a contradiction. Ad sheyavo ha-kosev ha-shlishi v'yachriya b'neihem. Until a third pasuk comes, is machria, brings peace, includes both of them. In amongst the umas olam, amongst the goyim, they don't really care if there's fighting. An even number in math, we think even is actually a nice number. In Yiddishkeit, it's really not, because then you have one person on that side, one person on that side, then there's a machlokas. How do you bring the two together? Two is not even when it comes to Yiddishkeit. In fact, there's a Gemara in Pesachim that tells us, we don't paskin this way, but something called zugos. Zugos means you're not supposed to have anything in pairs. It's dangerous. It's a shadim, not thing we'd practice by. But you shouldn't have 2 cups of water, 4 cups, or 6 cups. Anything that's even is actually dangerous for us because there's an imbalance there. You want an odd number because the odd number actually makes everything work out nicely. It makes a decision. If you have one person saying X, another person saying Y, well, how are you going to make a decision? The third person comes and makes a decision how to paskin, make shalom between the two of them. A bezdin. How many people are in a bezdin? Forget the 70. 70 work differently. But in a regular bezdin, if you have to go, let's say, for a monetary discussion, a machlok is about who owes who money. Has to have 3 people. Because you have 2 people, if Rabbi A says one thing, Rabbi B says something else, well, then you're stuck. So Rabbi C says, no, it should be this way. This way, it's a vote, 2 to 1 always. The odd number always allows for there to be a decision. So 12 amongst Umos Olam is always normal. 12 hours, 12 months. 13 is out of their realm. They don't know what to do with the number 13. But for us, the number 13, an odd number, is actually machria. It makes us, forces us to have a decision. So the 13th midah, She'ator Nidresh Behen, is dafka at this point. When there's a contradiction of 2 psukim, you have to bring another pasuk, an odd pasuk, to be machria, to bring shalom, to make a decision here. Rav Yashiv was once making a siyum. I think it was Baba Metzia, Baba Kama. And anyone who's been to a siyum before, the one thing that sticks with a person who's been to a siyum is we say all the names of Rav Papa's sons. Rami Papa, Rachman Papa, Papa. There are 10 sons of Rav Papa that we say. Why do we say Rav Papa's 10 sons at the end of all the siyum? Very strange. Rav Yashiv said because there are 10 places throughout all of Shas, throughout all of Gemara, where Rav Papa is machria the din. There's a machlokas. Should we do A? Should we do B? Rav Papa says let's do both of them. An example. The Gemara says that when it rains after a big drought, and all the Jews are busy fasting for rain. So I forget exactly the text, but one person says, say this bracha of thanks. Another one says, say a different bracha. Rav Papa says, say both of them. Rav Papa is machria the din. The end of every single siyum is to be machria. Whenever there's machlokas, do both of them. And therefore, it's no coincidence that the gematria of Papa, Rav Papa, gematria of Papa, pay is how many? 80. So 2 pays is 160, plus aleph is 1, 161. That's the same exact gematria as Vinakeh, 161. Rav Papa represented that 13th midah of Vinakeh. There should be clean. Everything should be wiped clean. There should be no machlokas. There should be machriya the din. Everything should be entirely equal. So in that same scene, that Rav Yashar said this Chiddush Rav Papa. So there's an amazing Maisa happened afterwards. There was a person who was there who wanted to know where these 10 places in Shas are, where in fact Rav Papa says, let's do like everyone. Let's be Machriya the Din. So he went home. There are different search engines. You could search these things up. So he typed in Rav Papa and looked all the places where it said Rav Papa's name in Shas. It says it many, many times. But he looked for 10 places where he's actually Machriya the Din, where he says, say like both of them. And he started counting. And only 9. So Rav Yashar made a mistake. Now that's hard to imagine Rav Yashar made a mistake. But he did it again. He did the search for Papa's name. He found all the places. There are only 9 places where Papa says, not 10. So why are we mentioning Rav Papa's 10 sons at the end of every single seum? So the individual didn't want to go to Rav Yashar. He was very old. He was hard to get to. So he went to Rav Yashar's son-in-law, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who's also hard to get to, but he's more accessible. So he goes to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and he tells him what happened. You know, your shver, your father-in-law, made a very nice drasha about the 10 sons of Rav Papa, the 10 places in Shas Rav Papa says that he's Machriya the Din. But he made a mistake. There are only 9 places. Rav Chaim started to laugh really hard. He says, you think the computer is smarter than Rav Yashav? Yeah, you think so? Look in the Gemara and Shem Brachos. I think it's Daf Yud Aleph from the base. There's machlokas what to say for Birchas HaTorah. Should you say Lasok B'Divrei Sarah? Another opinion says V'Harevna. Another one says Asher Baruch Habanu. And then Rav Hamanuna says say all 3 brachas. But if you look in the side of the page, Rabbi Kiva Eger says it should be Rav Papa. So it wasn't in the Gemara itself, but it was a mistake in the Gemara that Rav Papa should have been there. If you look in Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Rush and all the Rishonim, it should be Rav Papa. And that's the 10th time it says Rav Papa's name. He's Machriya the Din. So now we find ourselves on the 13th day, Titus Esther, on the 13th month, Adar Beis, which is a month of tremendous mazel. All the mazels come together. So we have a few hours left until the Megillah. So we should really take advantage of this day, this Tainus Esther day, the day of Tefillah, the day of all Nuschos coming together. And it's a double 13, because the 13th day in the 13th month, the Gematria is 26, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei. And we know that Amalek, the Torah tells us, that Kadosh Baruch whose name is incomplete. Yad Al Kes Ka. Ka stands for Yud Hei, we say Ka. Yad al Kes Ka. Hashem's name is incomplete. There's only a Yud Hei of Hashem's name. The Vav Hei of Hashem's name is not there. Rashi says, and not until we wipe out Amalek entirely will Hashem's name be complete. And these days now, between what's the earliest day you're allowed to read Megillah, anyone know? Yud Aleph. Yud Aleph is the earliest day, and the latest day we read is the 15th, Shushan Purim. So Yud Aleph is the gematria of Vav Hei. Vav Hei is 11. Yud Aleph. 15, the 15th is Yud Hei. So 11 and 15, that range indicates the separation between Hashem's Yud Hei and Hashem's Vav Hei. Those letters are separate. But Yud Gimel, when Tainus Esther happens, when Esther said, Leich Knos Kol HaYudim, the day of gathering everyone together, the Achdus, the gematria of Echad is 13. That Yud Gimel Tainus Esther is a day of Achdus, everyone coming together. Leich Knos, Kol Yehudim, that everyone should come together to daven. To daven for Hashem's name to be complete. We should be zoch to that day, Hashem's name is complete. B'yom ahu yeh Hashem Echad, Ushmo Echad, everyone should have an easy fast, a meaningful fast, and a Freilich and Purim.